Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Welcome back. Lollapalooza ends today, but in a couple weeks, sort of Lollapalooza for adults happens when the Democratic National Convention moves here. You may not know it now, but you will by the time the convention arrives. So Chicago has been the convention, political convention capital of the country for many years. I'm pleased to have on the phone a University of Chicago, my father's alma mater, University of Chicago Professor John Mark Hansen, and one of the leading scholars in American politics and a Chicago historian. That's quite a combination. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rick. I'm happy to be here.
Great. And you'd like to be called Mark, yes or no? Or
yes, I do.
Perfect. See what genius I am. I'm not going to say what pulled you into this kind of academic scene, but what was it about Chicago? I have my theories. What was it about Chicago that made it the first real, I pinned the first real convention on 1860, but you think there was one before that, yes? Here.
No, 1860 was the first one.
I would have liked to have been at the 1860 one because the Chicago Tribune and its publisher, Joseph Medill, had a big part in electing a Republican. It occurs to me that a lot of people never think of Abraham Lincoln as a Republican. Do you find that true? I don't know why that is, but people have been, in my talking to them, I said, oh, of course, Lincoln was a Republican. They don't seem to realize that. That was quite a convention, was it not?
Oh, yeah, it was very, very much momentous. It was the second one that was in the West, and it was the second one that the Republican Party had ever had.
Yeah, I know. The Republican Party had been formed seven years before that. What was it that made I have heard a number of theories, and I have some, too, but I would like to ask you, Chicago has held twice as many major party political conventions as any other city in this land. Mark Hansen, why is that?
The main reason, I think, is because Chicago is centrally located. If you look at the three cities that have hosted the most conventions, So Chicago's first with 26. Baltimore, depending on how you count, is somewhere between 12 and 15. Philadelphia's at around 10. What all of those cities have in common is that they were centrally located for their time. Back in the day when transportation was by steamship, then Baltimore was very much in the center of the country, and Philadelphia likewise in the center of the country. And Chicago became more and more in the center of the country as
train trail
moved toward rail transportation and then toward propeller-driven aircraft.
Do you think it has anything to do with, and this is one of my theories, and I've done a bit of research on this, certainly not on the level of yours, but was part of it, do you think, over the years, Chicago has ever had a reputation as a kind of wide-open town. And conventioneers being conventioneers, I do not consider delegates to a convention that much more rarefied than I would a convention of heart surgeons, for instance. Do you think that at all played into Chicago's status as a convention town?
Well, I'm sure it did,
yeah.
Because Chicago is not only known for political conventions, it's known for other conventions.
Absolutely, sure.
Either the first or the second largest convention center for professional associations, for trade shows, all those kinds of things. And so the availability of easy transportation on the one hand, but also things to do once you get here is a very important part of it.
Yeah, I think it was 1944, was it 42 or 44, that there used to be a Billy Goat Tavern across the street from the convention, and the owner of the Billy Goat Tavern put up a sign saying, "No Republicans served here," which, of course, infuriated the Republicans, and they jammed the place. It was just a great, great marketing thing. It was a 1944 Republican National Convention. Which do you think, in looking back over the colorful history of these conventions, and I know this is a sort of odd question because it could never happen. If you could have been a participant, even as a delegate, if you could have been at one of these conventions, is there one that you as an academic, but also as a human being, would have loved to have been participating in?
Boy, that's a hard one. There have been so many interesting ones. The classic one, of course, is the Abraham Lincoln
sure.
Convention in 1860. Another one that's perhaps more illustrative of Chicago as a center of machine politics is the 1940 Democratic Convention in Chicago,
yep.
Where Roosevelt was drafted, quote-unquote, for a third term, with the connivance of Mayor Kelly and his sewer commissioner, who basically started a chant from the basement of the Chicago Stadium, "We want Roosevelt, we want Roosevelt." And everybody else who was in on it picked it up, and that was kind of what got Roosevelt on the agenda for a second term.
You know, in thinking about this and thinking about talking to you, it occurs to me that conventions, is there a need, Mark Hansen, is there a need for political conventions, these presidential political conventions these days?
Not so much.
Yeah. Yeah,
they've really been infomercials ever since the mid-1970s,
yep.
Kind of three-day infomercials, four-day infomercials. And actually, that was the result of another Chicago convention, the 1968 Democratic Convention, where after the convention, the Democratic Party decided to reform the nominating process and to make primaries much more authoritative in the choice of the nominees. And that's what's really meant that not much really happens at the convention because it's simply there to ratify the choice the voters made in primaries.
Yeah, they are in essence to me, and have seemed most. I worked at the 68 convention, which was really something.
And Donnybrook.
Pardon me. Yes, it was. You know, one of the interesting things about that convention, Mark Hansen, was, you know, Daley, the mayor of Chicago, then Richard Jay, was terribly fearful before the convention arrived because of what had happened in April in the wake of the Martin Luther King assassination. The West Side went up in flames, and he was terrified of black protests. And so he had his cops sort of buckle down on all the black gang leaders in Chicago. And I think he was kind of shocked by the long-haired protesters that came here. His reputation, can you talk to me for a second about his reputation? To some, was very sullied by that, but when you look at his election results in the wake of the 68 convention, he was still getting 70-some% of the vote, and I think public sentiment across the country was kind of with Daley. Like, you know, you should be beating up these long-haired radicals. Do you buy that at all?
Well, certainly the unrest in cities broadly.
Yeah.
Not just the 68 convention in Chicago, but the riots that occurred after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the riots that occurred earlier in the 1960s in different cities.
In Detroit.
In Detroit, yeah. In Los Angeles, in Washington, D.C., Newark. All of that was, I think, frightful to lots and lots of voters. And of course, one of the things that the Nixon campaign ran on in 1968 was law and order.
Yeah. Yeah.
And really trying to crack down on disorder in cities. But a lot of what that meant was cracking down on dissent.
Yep. No kidding. No kidding. I am on the phone with John Mark Hansen, a historian and a political science professor at the University of Chicago. How long have you been at the U of C?
Oh, boy. It's getting up in the high 30s
okay.
since the 1980s.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. We'll continue on after a short little break. I want to talk about some of you. I want to actually get your impression of, in a broad sense, this current presidential race. We know who's running, except for one vice president still to be picked, maybe momentarily, And what do you think of that? Because you cover not just, I mean, you certainly know your stuff about the Democratic conventions here, and I'm pleased to have heard your take on that. But also about politics in general, if you don't mind. Do you mind?
That'd be fine.
Wonderful. Thanks. Hold on. We'll be back in a couple minutes. John Mark Anson's political professor at the University of Chicago, and he's kind of an expert on the many, many conventions Chicago has had, more than any, double those of any other city. And it's a fascinating, it is a really fascinating history. We were concentrating recently on 1968 because it's all about me, Mark. It's all about me. I was there and saw it for what it was. And these, what do you think of Milwaukee's Republican convention, just as an informed observer?
Well, it was what we have kind of come to expect, in both from conventions and from Donald Trump.
Yeah,
it was, you know, very much an infomercial,
sure.
Very much kind of aimed at trying to set out some messages for the fall campaign. But it was also one that they had, because of the assassination attempt, decided that they were going to try to do a little bit differently, but then they didn't do it differently after all.
Exactly. Why is that? Why do you think that is?
The guy can't help himself. and the people who are enthusiastic about him really can't help themselves.
Yeah, you're right. Do you anticipate here? I have talked to a number. I'm doing a couple stories. I'm going to use some of what we talk about here in a story I'm doing about Chicago's convention capital. How do you feel just looking at how the city is planning to, and I can use the phrase deal with, but cope with the many, many protests that are planned here? You think that has a potential to backfire somehow?
I don't really think so. I there was a very interesting article early in the fall, earlier this year. I think it was in The Atlantic, where they talked about how it was unlikely that Chicago in 2024 was going to be like Chicago in 1968.
Yeah.
And the main reason they cited was something that I hadn't really thought about. I sort of knew this, but I hadn't really thought about it. And the reason is because the people who provide security for the convention are Secret Service now, not local police.
Right.
And they're pros. They know what they're doing. It's also the case that there's been more and more restrictions placed on time, place, and manner for protests.
No question. Yeah.
Usually they're kept a good bit away from where the delegates are, and a good bit away from where there's a possibility of real violence.
Well, I certainly hope so. I remember, one of the most shocking, not that you care what my theories or experiences are, but I'll never forget I was only 16, I was working in the basement of the Hilton and taking a cab with one of the reporters down to the amphitheater where that year's convention was centered, and it was like an armed camp for roughly a mile around the place. No, you could not get anywhere close. Do you think, is there a future for Chicago or no Chicago? And we talk about Chicago being the capital. We've had, you know, two in the last 50 years. Do you think there's any need? And I know I keep pressing you on this, Mark Hansen, but is there any longer any need for political conventions, the way the whole, you know, primary system is set up now?
I think there's still a need for them, but it's primarily a need for the party to have a chance to kind of try out its messages, the party to have a chance to get excited about the nominee, the party to have a chance to sort of show itself off. I mean, you know, that's, as I say, they're infomercials, but, you know, infomercials are, you know, part of a sales pitch to the American public, but also a way of kind of motivating party activists and motivating party rank and file to really, you know, get out and to be enthusiastic about the ticket.
That's a good point. And I know you also do some work with studies of public opinion and politicians' inferences from the outcomes of election. And as far as public opinion, it doesn't just confound me. It sort of makes me sad that the number of registered voters, of possible voters, remains so pathetically small in what is important decisions of our life. Do you ever get stunned by that? Do you think 75% of everybody eligible voters should be voting? I'm sure I'd like it, but what do you think?
We're among the countries with the lowest voter turnout.
I know.
Of all of the democratic countries. There are some that are lower. Switzerland, for instance, is usually right down at the bottom. But part of that is because we don't have mandatory voting. There are countries that require people to vote. The fine, if you don't, is like a parking ticket. It's not really very much.
But right.
Just the statement that we think that you should vote is enough to get people out. The other is that we have a two-party system rather than a multi-party system. It's a two-party system and a presidential system as opposed to a ministerial system, a prime minister system, parliamentary system, where the political parties are much more involved in getting people out to vote. They oftentimes have very close relationships, particularly the parties on the left with labor unions and with other organizations to get people out to vote. So there are a whole bunch of reasons why we're kind of on the low end of things. But things have actually risen. You'll remember in the 1990s, voter turnout, even in presidential elections, was starting to get close to 50%. And in midterm elections, in congressional off-year elections, it was down in the 40s.
Yeah,
And we've seen a real, real increase. And the reason for that is because elections are really close now, and it really matters to get people out to vote.
What troubles me, too, let me get your take. I know we're going all far afield, but what are your general thoughts about the Electoral College? Is that a good way to go about this, to have four or five states, have the entire election, especially this upcoming one, depend on four or five states?
Well, I think it's a provision or it's an institution that has outlived its usefulness a long time ago. I've been writing op-eds arguing that we should abolish the Electoral College since 2000 and with no hope that it will ever actually happen.
Right.
I think there are two main things wrong with it. The first is that it really does end up concentrating the country and the campaign on the concerns of a little bunch of states that are unrepresentative of the whole country, and their concerns get elevated, and the concerns of other parts of the country get left behind because you need to win in those states and you don't need to win in those other states. The other is that it means that the campaign really kind of focuses on those few states, which means that kind of opportunities to actually appeal to voters in other ways. If we didn't have the Electoral College, we would have Democrats campaigning in southern Texas on the Mexican border, looking to try to boost turnout among Latinos, say, in southern Texas. And we'd have Republicans campaigning in upstate New York.
Yeah.
Or in
the
Central Valley of California, places they never go right now.
Well, it seems to me that would be to your point, a brilliant one, too. It would just seem a healthier democracy were that to ever happen. I'm going to have to look up your op-eds and see what you had to say. Where do you publish op-eds? Do you publish in the Tribune at all?
Yes, I do from time to time, although not on this particular subject. I had an op-ed in about the Electoral College in the Washington Post in 2001, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And And then another one in the Law Review. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, please. No, by all means. By all means. I'll track it. Yeah, you have my email. It's frustrating for me. I voted in a lot of elections. I mean, and the first guy I ever voted for was Richard J. Daley after the Democratic convention too, because I just thought he knew how to run a city. But I just think that democracy, and you're so right about these conventions now being lengthy and basically free commercials. I need to know that who Hulk Hogan is going to vote for, or if he votes, or if he votes at all. I don't even know if he votes at all. So, someone who is talk to the, you know, if they're out there listening, talk to the 21-year-old who might be making his or her first presidential vote this year. What should he or she look for if they decide to watch the Democratic convention in the next couple of weeks? What should they be concerned with, Mark?
Well, the Republicans have been concerned about whether Taylor Swift is going to endorse
right.
First Biden and then Harris. So maybe something along those lines.
Good Lord, yeah, that's what America has come down to. Oh, who's Taylor Swift? I'll vote for whoever Taylor Swift votes for. It's crazy. but is there anything to watch? I'm not saying anybody's going to watch the entire convention. I might. I'm sure you might too. But it's a show, right? It's a show.
It's a show.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time, of course, when the political parties were paying a lot of attention to young voters, and 1968 was one of those times.
Yep.
Because those protests were motivated by the Vietnam War,
mm-hmm.
and by the sentiment against the war among the people who would have to be fighting it.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of college students.
And, yep.
College-age students who were out there on the streets. And similarly, of course, out of that came the 26th Amendment and the extension of the vote to 18 to 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
That persisted into the early 1970s. Mm. I guess what I've seen in my classes is that in the 1980s, 1990s, when I was first teaching at the University of Chicago, I would say that there wasn't too much interest in American politics and too much interest in what was going on in American politics. And then the Bush administration was elected in 2000 in the first electoral college anomaly since 1888.
Yeah.
And went to war in Iraq 3 years later. And all of a sudden people thought, wow, things I care about are really affected by what happens in American politics.
And one can only hope. John Mark Hansen, it's great to talk to you again. I know we talked before. You make me smarter. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
My pleasure. It has been fun for me, too.